thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
Doesn't mean I'm right, but I think I'm high. It's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Weekdays, 1 to 3. Saturdays, 10 to noon. Don't forget, on all social media, search for WGN King John. That's where you will find me. And our award-winning podcast is called The Mincing Rascals. Literally, a friend of mine in from out of town, I hadn't seen him in years, old college buddy, said, "Hey, how do you do The Mincing Rascals?" I said, "Seriously, what are you, 60? A woman called in yesterday to the Bright Side of Life segment. Actually, it was on Friday when we did our Bright Side. People share good news. And she said, "I found out how to do the stream." There are various ways to consume the things we do here. It's not just enough to turn on the radio if you want to get a chance to hear all the stuff we're doing. And I know that can be complicated or a little frustrating at times, but not if you just make an honest effort. I said, get out your phone. You have an app built into it called Podcasts. He said, "No, I don't." There it was. I said, "Now type in The Mincing Rascals." Broom. There's a whole bunch of links to our podcasts. I said, "Now if you hit that, just touch it with your finger, it will play on your radio. In fact, if you have a smart speaker, all you have to say is, play The Mincing Rascals podcast, and it'll come on over your smart speaker too." So that's just a quick primer there on some of the things you can do to listen to the things that we do here. I hope you had a real good weekend. Oh, I want to mention one other quick thing, and that is our next Thomas Jefferson show. Do you have your tickets to that? It's going to be May 18th at the Classic Cinemas Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove. It's a 10 a.m. tip-off, and that'll be Saturday, May 18th in Downers Grove at the Tivoli. Thank you very much to the Joint Relief Institute for sponsoring this thing. They're in Orland Park and Oak Brook, you know. So what else should you know? Just go to WGNradio.com/Jefferson and you can get your tickets to see and be part of a unique conversation with the third president of the United States. Lapka, do you have brackets and are you following how the NCAA tournament went over the weekend?
Ugh, yes. I know, fell very hard over.
Your Purdue is out.
Oh, my gosh. I don't even want to talk about it because I will go on for your whole show about all the issues from that game.
Officiating bother you?
Yes. Yes. At least four huge calls or non-calls that definitely made a difference.
You know what? I'm not a big fan of the instant replay in any sport. And I see them, it's just getting further and further into games. And at one point in one of the games, they said, well, they might as well go ahead and take a look at this. It's too important. And I thought, it's a game that is being played in real time. If you stop and look at every out of bounds, every potential foul, every ball and strike, you are taking away from the very reason we're there, and that's the game.
There was one of the games this weekend where it was like, we'll just do it. You know, it wasn't even kind of close, but it's like, oh, let's get a double check.
Exactly. Well, in the White Sox game, that happened because Eloy Jimenez had a hit, or looked like a hit. They called it a hit. And then they said, well, we can go ahead and, why not? Just go ahead and take a look at it.
Yeah, and I'm talking about the NCAA basketball tournament where they're going to the monitors now over and over.
Yeah, I know. And it's not very quick, and sometimes it's not very clear. And I just think it's a lot to ask athletes performing at that high a level with that much intensity to stop and start, stop and start, stop and start. I don't know if that helps you at all. Lapka, but there's
ease
that.
Ease the pain of it, yeah.
No, maybe not. It's funny because Steve and my teams were out of it so early that we're not going through the anxiety. It's almost like just as well you don't go deep in the tournament because then it's just that much more painful when you crash and burn.
You know, I was with a buddy this weekend. He goes, well, you know, I've always said it's all about the tournament, so if you go out in the first game, the season was kind of a waste. Did we have this conversation? And I feel just the opposite. I mean, I had 22 great nights this winter watching fun basketball.
When Marquette won 22 games.
I would have taken, I don't know, I think that's what they won, but I mean, I would have taken three more fun days, didn't get it, but I don't think the season was a waste.
I'll bet you didn't have Duke losing to Michigan State and Texas and Auburn in your Final Four, eh? Maybe you had Virginia in your Final Four, and maybe you had Michigan State. But who had all four teams in the Final Four? Elif, let's do this. What percentage of people, and it's not a crazy year, right? Because, you know, the one and two seed, all the low seeds did well. There's no 12s and 13s here. There's no nines here, for crying out loud. So, Elif, what percentage of people in NCAA pools have perfect Final Four brackets? All four teams right, please.
Only 0.02% of the brackets at CBS and NCAA.com have the four teams in the Final Four correct.
0.02, 0.02%.
That's a shocker to me.
Why do you say that?
Because like you said, there's a five seed.
Right, this is a very predictable bracket, except nobody ever heard of Texas Tech. And, you know, Auburn's a football school. I mean, I think your mind works that way. But, I mean, Michigan State, come on. A lot of people thought they were the five seed in the tournament. And Virginia, all right, so they didn't lose in the first round. Yeah, they're a one seed. They should be there. Duke's what messed everybody's brackets up. Something like 8 of the 10 remaining brackets that were correct got messed up because everybody had Duke winning the whole thing. I saw at ESPN they had 17.2 million brackets. 17.2 million brackets at ESPN. And 7,900 of them are still correct. That is, have the Final Four. So that's 0.046% or something. So it's amazing, though, isn't it? I mean, when you look at it now, you go, ah, yeah, all right, I can see that. All right, well, then go ahead and bet on it because... What was the number, Elif? Producer Elif, what was the percentage of people that got the brackets correct again, please? Do you have that?
0.02%, John.
No. Not many. Then I watched some baseball and listened to some baseball. Brenda and I were out of town. We were coming back from Indianapolis, so we listened to virtually the entire White Sox game against Kansas City on the radio. And then we got home in time to watch the Cubs. What did we learn last year about the playoffs and games in April? This is for Cubs fans everywhere. What did we learn last year about the baseball playoffs and games teams play in April? Anyone? Okay, I'll go first. I believe what we learned is that while you cannot win the playoffs in April, you can lose the playoffs in April. Or put yourself in a position where you're in a one-game playoff and then you're screwed. These games matter. These games count as much as the ones due in September. So the Cubs, and I'm not, this isn't me, there's nothing gleeful in my voice. It's just kind of incredulity, if nothing else. I mean, doggone it, the Cubs look good at times, right? On offense, 28 runs, 39 hits in 3 days. 28 runs and 39 hits the first 3 days when it's cold. And they lose 2 of 3. And the White Sox looked like they were going to mess up Lucas Giolito's almost no-hitter. Ed and DJ absolutely did not mention that he had a no-hitter in the seventh. So they're up 6-0 and then end up winning 6-3. And I wasn't sure the White Sox were going to win their first game. So there's your little summer. Oh, and one other thing about sports over the weekend. It was kind of a sporting weekend. It's fun to have baseball in our world again, isn't it? Nice distraction, et cetera, et cetera. One thing about the NCAA brackets in Michigan State beating Duke. I am not a perennial Duke hater, but they did not deserve to be in the Final Four since the last two games that they won were games where their opponents missed very makeable shots. They should have lost their last two games anyway, Duke. One was a putback that was almost a layup, and one was a shot that came off a perfectly executed out-of-bounds play. It was 5 feet from the rim. That was kind of a bunny for that kid, and he missed it. So Michigan State didn't like their seed, but what do you know? Everybody said, well, then just go play Duke and beat them. And they did, so they move on. This after in the first round against Bradley, Tom Izzo got so angry, he's the coach of Michigan State, got so angry at freshman Aaron Henry that his players had to calm him down. It looked at one point like Izzo was going to hit the kid. I'm not sure he wasn't going to. After the game, Izzo defended his behavior. Now, after that Michigan State win over Duke, Dave Kaplan, who used to work here and does a real good job, but Kaplan, who's also a very good friend of Tom Izzo, Kaplan tweets, I guess the Michigan State players were so scarred by their head coach holding them accountable and, heaven forbid, raising his voice at them, that they folded and got knocked out of the NCAA tournament. Oh, wait. On to the Final Four. That got 2,000 likes. 254 retweets. And I'm just thinking, Cap, isn't it possible that in spite of Izzo's outburst, they advance? Not because of Izzo's outburst, they advance? Here he is, this Hall of Fame, rich, powerful, legendary adult coach, and he is completely losing it in the face of a 19-year-old freshman who's playing in the biggest game of his life. And what I want to do is hear from management types to tell me if screaming like that works. Izzo is mad the kid wasn't hustling and he was making mental mistakes. And maybe you can yell at somebody loud enough that they'll run faster. But I just don't even think that's smart management of the team.
Don't pursue this because that'd be a great business lunch topic. I'll do that later this week.
Think about that. You should get some. I mean,
because I've been watching then because of that, John, I started watching other coaches. And it is funny because I think we're at a time where the sort of outbursty coach is going to pass. You know what I mean? I mean,
they do seem old school to me. Yes,
they do, and they seem like of a different era. But then, if you watch most coaches, they all seem angry on the sideline. You know, there is that sort of default.
Well, how would you describe Krzyzewski at Duke?
Not. I would describe him as sort of stoic for the most part.
He is red in the face,
really?
Furious, but he doesn't get Izzo. He doesn't do that.
But Pearl, Pearl was, he wasn't yelling like Izzo, but he was yelling a lot.
Brad Stevens went from My Little Butler to NCAA championship games in back-to-back years from Tiny Little Butler. He goes to the Boston Celtics. Never lost his cool.
Right, right. So he's an example of the other side, which I think is going to be the future of it, you know, given the whole, and it's related to the Me Too movement and all of that. You don't scream at people that way anymore.
And I agree with you on that.
I mean,
these are men coaching men. I mean, and young men who are used to getting yelled at because that's what coaches do in youth sports. I'm just talking about if it's even smart. If you want to win the game, is that the best way to get the best out of that kid? Can you scare him into doing better? I'm done.
Yeah, I don't have the answer to it, but I just, you know, focusing on Izzo, who's by far the extreme, and really should have been arrested. I mean, but you look at other coaches, and they still are yellers for the most part, and I would have reacted well to that.
John, Izzo sounds like the Whiplash guy, the guy in Whiplash. Yeah, he was at that moment. What about women's basketball? Always men's, never women's. I don't know what you're asking me about women's basketball. I know they have a tournament. I didn't watch much of it.
I think that's the point.
Yeah, well, whatever. That's not what I'm talking about now. John, I saw the game when he was in the freshman's face, and two different players held the coach back. That is true, too. Eventually, one of the players said, "Coach, tell me, and I'll tell him." So one of the young men then says, "What do you want?" He says, "I need him to do this." And then the kid communicated that like he was an interpreter for Izzo. If you're a business person, I just like your, if you're an executive, if you're a smart person, I'd like to know what you think should happen in that scene. This texter said, "There's few times a team had been out of timeouts and the refs go to the monitors, giving the team with no timeouts an extra timeout. That is so frustrating." I bet Lauren Lapka didn't like that either. Right? So if you manage your timeouts to your advantage and the other coach has burned him because he's had issues, but in the last minute, you know, they're going to say, "Well, let's go to the monitors for about a day and a half and Zapruder-like examine every angle from space."
It's so true. It's true. I mean, at the very end of the games, things like timeouts and obviously the whole game of fouls, that's all strategy. And so when officials play the game and kind of give it away to someone else by doing that, is frustrating.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it, too, when officials play the game. It's like you guys should not be that involved. You don't need to micromanage. I know it's important, yada-da-da-da, but really, no one's going to get cancer here, right? Do the best you can. Let's keep the game moving. And if you're looking over and over at replays, plays to the advantage of the other coach, then, in fact, you've inserted yourself into the game. You're not supposed to do that.
I also think it's interesting, this is a little tangent, but then they go over now and are talking to the announcers, explaining what happened,
yeah,
which I think is a real plus. And you know the announcers must have been told you cannot ask a question, right? Because it doesn't need to become a dialogue. It's just the official explaining what happened, and then he backs away. You know what I'm saying?
Better than not at all, though, right?
Oh, definitely better than not at all. But I'm sure that there's a policy. It's like, we're going to explain it.
Mr. Referee, can I just have a follow-up?
Yeah.
No, you cannot.
Exactly.
I'm on TV. We're playing a game here.
We've got to go.
Hi, John. I just added the Mincing Rascals to my podcast app. I didn't know I had a podcast app either until you just mentioned it on the radio. Who knew? Signed, Brian, age 49. WGN Radio News. And then the Biden story coming up. John Williams here. We were talking about Tom Izzo, Michigan State, the NCAA basketball tournament, Duke, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Some of your texts include these. John, my boss used to yell at me and even threw things. I told him if he did it again, I would quit. That player deserves respect. John, two words, Bobby Knight. At least a chair did not come flying across the court. A lot of you are mentioning Bobby Knight, and some of you are saying Bobby Knight was successful yelling at players. I'm not sure if you're all defending that kind of behavior.
And that's my point. He was, but I think that era is passing. It certainly hasn't passed yet.
Think about Bobby Knight when he choked. Was it his son? Who was the player? His son was on his team. I don't know if it was his son that he throttled. This texter says, Bobby Knight, mega jerk, up to and including choking players. But 630 says, John, these players are 19, not 9.
Well, I wouldn't like it if someone threatened to punch me, and I'm way over 19.
My wife and I were talking about it and said, if that was my son, say you're good enough to play at Michigan State, and you're 19 and you're a freshman. The world is your oyster. You can go play for anybody, anywhere, right? I mean, do you not just counsel that kid and go, hey, guess what? We're not going to play for Michigan State anymore. You're going to transfer. You're going to lose a year. You're going to go to Michigan, or you're going to go to someplace else, and you'll be fine. You are not playing for that guy anymore. Would you intervene that way? And on go the texters.
Would you intervene that way? Your son played college basketball or college sports.
Yeah, I don't know. My wife and I go, we would pull him out. But I don't know what we would
do.
I mean, how can you know? Because it's Michigan State. It's Tom Izzo. And you were lollygagging back on defense. You got to hustle back on defense. But it's not so much about what the kid did. This is the trap one should not fall into. It doesn't matter what the kid did. It didn't matter if the kid was making mental mistakes or physical mistakes or wasn't hustling. Take him out if he's not hustling enough. You got other kids who happen to get scholarships and were really good high school players. Put them in. I mean, figure it out, coach. It's not about the kid. We're talking about you. All right, there's that. By the way, the news click over the weekend asked you this question. Based on our office's handling of the Jussie Smollett case, should Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox resign? And 92% of you said yes. The new news click is this. 5 years ago, Joe Biden kissed a candidate in Nevada on the head. Can you even believe that's the first sentence of today's news click? I mean, seriously, John, are you kidding me? 5 years ago, Joe Biden kissed a candidate in Nevada on the head. A, let's give Joe a pass. It's not a big deal. B, let's give Joe a pass, but this is a big deal. C, let's not give Joe a pass on this. You have three choices at WGNradio.com. I do not know how this one's going to go. I would have guessed the Kim Fox thing would be very one-sided. Incidentally, read Darlene Glanton in today's Chicago Tribune. Whenever you think you've got it, a slam dunk, your hot take on some issue, wait until Darlene Glanton writes about it, and then you'll say, oh, maybe Rahm Emanuel's outburst was wrong, and there's another angle to the Kim Fox decision tree. I'm just saying, read Darlene Glanton in the Chicago Tribune. You know who Joe Biden sort of reminds me of, though? I mean, you cannot, appropriate or not, right? You cannot be entirely surprised that Joe Biden's physical or verbal demeanor might get him in trouble just because the guy is so awkward. And for some reason today, he's reminding me of that guy in the Colgate commercial, the close talker. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
I'm a close talker, so I was excited about all new Colgate Total. Its breakthrough formula does more.
He's right in the face of everybody.
Sensitivity strengthens teeth.
Walking stride for stride with a woman.
I like your confidence.
Thanks, Mr. Lee.
You know the guy I'm talking about? Have you seen these ads?
Now there's no such thing as too close.
Yes, there is.
No, there's not.
Yes, there is.
No, there's not.
Okay.
That's
Owen Wilson's brother. I can't.
Is it really?
Name. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It looks like him now that you mention it.
Why can't I think of his first name?
Owen Wilson's brother's
Luke.
Name? Luke?
Luke. That, Is that right? Yeah. I have a computer in front of me. I could just Google it.
It's funny. I mean, Luke probably has more successful movies than Owen, but he's still Owen Wilson's brother.
Getting back to Joe Biden now.
Right. It is Luke.
You cannot be surprised that Joe Biden is, how old is he, Elif? We looked it up. He's 76. 76 years old. I'm not sure that age forgives anything, but it helps to explain things. And I'll just say I'm not surprised to hear that Biden did that. He's very tactile. He's very in your space. He's a close talker. And he says lunky clunky things sometimes. And that's not new. Now, it's up to you to decide if you think that his behavior should really matter. But I got to tell you, my first reaction was, I can't believe this is an issue, considering the things that we've already decided are not disqualifying, at least. Nevada Democrat Lucy Flores in 2014 was running for lieutenant governor. Joe Biden was helping her on the campaign trail. He came up behind her, squeezed her shoulders, and gave her a long kiss on the head. On the top of the head. You know, the one way, though, to imagine how inappropriate or awkward it is, is to imagine what your reaction would be if a woman did that to a man, right? That's not the usual scenario. It seems like men are too often the aggressors or the guys who just don't have a clue. But we sort of accept that because it's so common. But really, think about that. What if the vice president was a female, and she comes up to a male candidate, squeezes his shoulders, and then gives him a long kiss on the head. You just go, what the hell are you doing, lady? And that's fair enough to react that way to Joe Biden in this case. But was it sexual? Was it, I'm trying to think of the things that would make it even worse than it is, besides just odd and awkward. And I don't think it's a lot of those things. I don't think it was hostile. I don't think it was a power play. I think it's Joe Biden's idea, however outdated, of being supportive and affectionate, and that's all. Now, she says, and he did too, I think this is, okay, so I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Biden said, we've arrived at a time, an important time, when women feel they can and should relate their experiences, and men should pay attention, and I will. Really, that's maybe the most important takeaway here, right? Is that, guys, that was a bad idea then. It's not acceptable now, and you have to stop it. You have to stop that. Even if your intentions are to be supportive and they're innocent, you have to stop that now. And guys didn't used to get that. They didn't used to care. They didn't even used to know that. And now they, and now you have no excuse not to. So Elif and I, my producer, are looking at pictures then of Joe Biden standing with women, because those are out there now. And instead of the hand on the shoulder, he liked to kind of grab him by the hips, pull him in a little tighter. And it's kind of the same conversation. Don't do that anymore. Shouldn't have done it then. It's to the point now where whenever we have a guest in the studio, and I'm not saying this is an inappropriate behavior, this is not an overreaction. I'm not saying what I'm about to describe is an overreaction. But I take pictures with strangers about every single day, either listeners who will see me somewhere or guests that come into the studio. And after we have a conversation, Ray Kaplan's going to come in. And I think Gloria Allred's a phoner. I'm thinking of female guests that will be on the show. Afterwards, we'll take a picture together. And then when we post the podcast, that picture goes with the audio. So you have to stand there with them. Once upon a time, you would put your hand on their waist or shoulder or find some way to corral each other, and you'd lean in and say, cheese. Now, I don't do that. If my arms are not at my side, I air touch people. I come in no physical contact anymore. Steve Bertrand is smiling and wondering what he should say. But Steve caught me one time shortly after the Me Too movement. We were at a remote.
And what did you do?
The ladies were all going to get a picture with us, and the phone wasn't working. And so then I kind of just said, well, that's okay. This, you know, we're all having fun here, and everybody giggles.
And you pulled them closer.
And I may have pulled them closer together. Right. And you looked at me aghast.
Right.
As I, you know, it's funny how long ago that seems, but I'll bet that wasn't 12 months ago.
No, I don't think so. But yeah, I remember that. That's
18 months ago.
Yeah, because I remember you did something that
30 years ago
was
like
absolutely
that.
Inappropriate by today's standards.
Yeah,
but I know what you mean. I am a air holder too. Like you don't quite
can't.
You
touch.
Might your fingertips might touch the sweater on the shoulder.
Yeah, right. And I guess the same should then be true for the ladies and the men.
Oh, hold me, I don't care.
Yeah, see, no,
I could use it.
No, that's tangential to the inappropriateness of what we just described, Steve.
What do you mean?
It's not okay.
To be fair, I think about myself in that way where I say, should I, like, I watch what I'm saying to men around the office more often, or
now I more than ever.
Think about it more,
yeah.
And I'm careful with how I talk to women here,
because,
too.
Oh, but I'm sorry. When you talk to a man, you are being careful not to throw off signals.
Exactly.
You mean, that could be misinterpreted as
yeah.
flirtatious.
Wow, you are really bad at not throwing off signals.
Steve's never got that feeling. No, but I think, well, that's, I think that's interesting and telling, Elif.
Yeah.
But it's also,
so to be fair, it's not just one side that's getting it, because women can be accused for the same thing.
No, but it's not fair, Elif. I mean, I'm glad that you're sensitive that way, but trust me, the damage is much greater on the other side.
Yeah, I know.
And the offense is greater on the other side, too, or has been historically. You know,
oh, for sure.
The men
for
have
sure.
been the perpetrators, but the risks that men are facing with that particular incident are much greater than what women
are
facing.
Well, that's right. Don't you think my description of if the gender were reversed in the now infamous kiss on the head scenario, we would see just how wrong or awkward or unusual that is?
I didn't see the video of it. Did you?
No, but I heard or read a description of it.
If a female politician was coming up and hugging other people, I don't think...
If the vice president of the United States came up to a male candidate running for a state lieutenant governor's office and in support leaned over from behind and planted a big, slow, warm, grandmotherly kiss on his head, that would look weird. No?
Yeah, probably. Was it a hair kiss or was it a forehead?
No pictures exist of the kiss. Elif says phone calls, 149. Your calls and texts are next. 312-981-7200. Let's pick up some phone lines. We'll start with Mike. You're on WGN. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing? I hope soon well.
Yeah, good. What's on your mind?
Hi. Interestingly enough, recently, about a year ago, was in a rehab situation in a hospital setting and was nervous about something that was going to be going on. And a nurse about my age did the exact same thing. She put her hand on my shoulders. She reached in. She kissed me on the top of the head, and she said, "You're going to get through this just fine." I did not interpret that in any way, shape, or form as being forward. What I thought was, oh, here's a really compassionate person, a person with a lot of love in their heart, and a person that actually made me feel better. So I'm surprised that this is a conversation. I can honestly tell you, she did not reach down and try and grab me in the netherworld where our current president has done.
Thanks for the phone call. We go from Mike to Russ. Russ, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hello. My daughter worked for a friend of mine who had he has a corporation and worked for him and knew him since she was 7 years old or whatever. And so she's working, and she's 25, would say at that time, she's 35, 10 years ago, working at the workplace. And he says, Katie, anyway, she's doing a good job, but he gave her a little swat on the fanny. So then the person, whatever that is in the factory, says, you cannot do that. Telling the owner, and this and that. My daughter didn't disagree. I mean, she was not offended. It was like a pat on the fanny. Like, that is you can't do that. And then my buddy tells me, he says, Russ, he goes, well, you know me. I said, yeah, I know you. You know my daughter. It's nothing. Don't worry about it. There's nothing that came to it, but it was inappropriate. In other words, if you were at a sports thing and you pat someone up, it's, she...
No, I get that, but what did your daughter think about that?
She laughed. She didn't care about it one bit.
Okay. Well, Russ, good. I appreciate your call, Russ. I'm trying to get in as many voices as I can. I'm going to go from you to Nancy. Hey, Nancy, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. This is quintessentially my father-in-law. You put him in a room, no matter whether it's a waitress, a nurse, anybody, and he will find a reason to make physical contact with them. If we're out at a restaurant and he wants to tip the waitress, he'll motion the waitress over to the table. He'll have his tip money folded up in his hand. He'll take one hand and put it around her, hold her close, and then give her the money in his hand and say, this is just for you.
What do you make of all of that?
He's a lech.
So you're not forgiving that for age. You're saying that's flat out bad.
I think it's flat out bad. I think it's, and I told him the first time I saw him do it, I was just flabbergasted. And then the second time my husband and I talked about it, he said, that's just wrong, Nancy. I mean, and where he lives in the Upper Peninsula, they had a self-service gas station, and they had a young woman there who was quite good looking, and he would make a point of always getting his gas there. And he started tipping her. And sure enough, he came and he called and complained that she wasn't working there anymore. She was working inside, and so he couldn't see her anymore at the gas station.
Wow. Yeah, that's not good.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's pretty terrible. I don't know this man. That's the problem, too, Guys that behave that way, that's terrible.
I think he's starved for affection, I think is a big part of it.
How old is he? I don't know. I hate to ask because it almost
doesn't matter. He just turned 89.
Yeah.
He just turned 89, but he's been doing this for at least 8-10 years.
That's the point. I'm out of time. That's a story.
I don't know whether
it's
right. So maybe it's an age thing, and maybe it's a grandfather thing, and maybe it's,
a lech thing.
A lech thing.
Thanks for the call.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
It's a living.
Here's John Williams.
Hi, this is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Studio A now. We move around a little bit.
Lord have mercy.
So we get ready for White Sox baseball. Got about a half hour of this and then that. If you want to continue to listen to this, listen at WGNRadio.com. Do you have the app? Do you listen to us online? Go to WGNRadio.com. You can continue to hear our show when we start pregame coverage of White Sox baseball. White Sox have won one in a row. How about that? Giolito looked good the other day. And the Cubs did not. I'm going to stop talking about that, but it's just kind of fun to see the fortunes of these two teams play out. And we're already making decisions and scratching our head and rooting for guys and wondering what's going to happen.
Well, and you say we, but you mean you. I mean, they played six games total, the two teams.
It's pretty much over now. Really don't see how the Cubs are going to make the playoffs. What's the lesson we learned? Kevin Powell's in sports now. I'll bet he knows the lesson we learned last year.
That it was a good thing to get rid of Jesse Chavez.
David Hochberg's in our studio, too. The lesson we learned last year about games in April and the playoffs is that you cannot win the playoffs in April, but anyone? Anyone?
You can lose the playoffs
You can
April.
Lose the playoffs in April.
You can freeze watching them.
That's true.
I noticed that the tickets sold was about 32,000 for the game in Kansas City, and the attendance was
12 or 13.
It was a lot less.
Well, did you see the game in Miami? I mean, you could literally count the people on opening day or the second game of the season.
That happens in Miami all the time.
All the time. There's so much to do in Miami. Why sit in a park to watch a baseball game?
I guess. It's not a baseball town.
Nope.
All right, David Hochberg.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You were on the phone with us when you were actually in Florida the other day. The line quit, so we stopped the interview.
That's good.
It was an executive decision I made at the highest levels.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And yet there I was reading, and still am, Joanne Cleaver's article in the Chicago Tribune. No, you do not need 20%. How Chicago millennials are buying first homes with down payment programs.
Yes.
How are millennials buying homes?
Millennials are buying homes. The funny thing is, I got a call as I was leaving to come here. A gentleman who listens to your show, who's listening right now, calls me with his daughter, Brittany, on the phone, buying her first home. Talked to a couple other lenders, and he trusted me more than he trusted the other lenders that she talked to. She's buying a home, $230,000 condo in Lincoln Park, putting down only 5% because her dad said that, and she both of them said, I'd rather have a couple extra bucks in the bank for an emergency or to upgrade some things and not put it on a credit card. So she's getting in 5% down, great credit, and you don't need 20% down. And I'll tell you what the biggest problem that we have, the biggest challenge that we have, and I've got some numbers here, and you asked me this question a couple of months ago when your son was looking, you know, do I have to put 20% down? I'm like, no, you don't have to put 20% down. You can put down as little as 3% down. There's a lot of programs with 3%. If you're a veteran, you could put down zero money down. There's programs through the Illinois Housing Development Authority with that'll give you grants up to $7,500.
So that doesn't mean you should. I mean, if you pay down the principal with a down payment, your monthlies are lower, right?
Correct. Well, there's a yin to that yang. So most people that you're in your listening audience are carrying about $30,000 worth of credit card debt. Okay, and that's just a fact. You go to creditcard.com. That $30,000 with credit card debt at a 4% minimum monthly payment comes out to $1,200 a month. So I ran some numbers here, right? I had one of my guys run it, Kevin Kochman run it, buying a $250,000 home, okay, standard home that your listeners buy, 20% down with the 660 credit score. Okay, there's your 20% down. There's no PMI. The payment, because the credit score...
Yeah, and the PMI. Keep going. Okay. That's not a small deal.
Well, hang on there. You know, let me get through this. 660 credit score is going to negatively impact the rate. So with the 660 credit score, 20% down, the interest rate for this borrower today is around 5.25%. Okay? So 5.25. Principal and interest payments, $1,105 a month. And they've got $30,000 worth of credit card, most likely. That's costing them $1,200 a month. Okay? So, in your plan, with these folks out there listening right now, if they put 20% down and carried the $30,000 with credit card debt, their total monthly payment would be $2,305.
$1,100 for the mortgage, $1,200 for the credit card.
Correct. Now, if they do what I'm recommending, what I've been recommending for the past 15, 16 years that I've been originating loans and been on the radio, you put 5% down. You take that extra dough, instead of putting it in the bank, sitting there earning you nothing, while you're paying $1,200 a month on credit card debt, you take that 30 G's and you pay down your credit cards, keep them open, don't shut them down. Your credit score shoots from a 660 to a 640. Your interest rate drops from 5.25.
650 to a 740.
740, my bad. Thank you for correcting me. So your credit scores go from a 660 to a 740. Your interest rate goes from 5.25. What do you think it goes down to?
4.5.
4.375. 5% down. No credit card debt. Yes, you have to pay that disgusting, horrible, terrible PMI. But here's the monthly payment. Your principal and interest payment is $1,186. Your private mortgage insurance is about $93. Your total all-in payment is $1,279. It's a $1,740 difference. Paying off your credit card debt.
Oh, that's combined?
Combined. You're paying $1,278 instead of $2,305. That's a huge difference. So you're putting 20% down going into this with credit card debt. First-time homebuyers, John, have student loan debt.
I guess so. Okay, that all makes sense, David. But, I mean, you've kind of carved out a scenario there that I think supports what you're talking about. Maybe they shouldn't be buying a home at all, and they should just be paying down their debt, get that credit card
sure.
at least bill reduced.
That's always a good option as well. You know, why go into it when you're paying off credit card debt and you're one furnace away, $4,000 or $5,000. If you're buying a home, got to replace a roof. It could be a couple of grand. It could be a $25,000 total tear off. Right. So
well, I wonder what you
watch. You got to be careful.
What would you say then if they came in with that scenario you described? Would you say, you know what, rent for another year, take that $1,200 that you're putting towards the mortgage that you're not going to have,
right?
and just pay down your credit card.
Well, it depends. Do they have a place to live?
Yeah, right. They got to pay rent.
You got to pay rent. So you, again, it's there's not a perfect world for every type of situation. I have people that I just had a gal, a young lady living at home, graduated with like $50,000-$60,000. She's an RN, making some great money because they're paying RNs. They're paying RNs because there's a shortage of nurses, so they're paying RNs very, very well. Lived at home for 3 years, paid off all of her student loan debt. Mom and dad didn't take any money for rent, which enabled her to pay it down.
I'm okay with that.
So she So she's coming into this with zero student loan debt and 5% down for a down payment.
Okay, what about that?
Game on.
She
wants to get out of her parents' basement and be closer to the hospital that she's working at.
I would stay there another couple of years.
That's you. Okay.
But it literally, just financially, wouldn't it be better for her to wait and put 20% down?
I've got I have a soon-to-be 16-year-old, 14-year-old, and 11-year-old at home. Okay? Yours are a little older. I've got three girls. Okay? Whatever I say, they're not listening to me, anything that I say. Okay? And from what I'm told, it doesn't change until they hit maybe their 30s. Okay? So then they start realizing maybe mom and dad have got something.
Smarter than they used to be.
Right. So if you have a job downtown and all your buddies and all your girlfriends and boyfriends are downtown, right? And everybody's moving downtown, have got places, and you don't have debt and you're tired of living at home. I lived in Des Plaines at my parents' house until I saved enough money for a down payment. I'll tell you what, on the weekends, it was kind of difficult because all my buddies were living in Lincoln Park and downtown. But I saved enough money to buy a 2800 North Lakeshore Drive with, I think I put 10% down on a $125,000 condo 20-some years ago. So I put $12,500 down, ran with PMI, took the money that I didn't put down, invested. Here's another angle that people don't realize. We have 3.5 months worth of inventory on the market right now. Big change from what it was 10 years ago when we had 3 years worth of inventory on the market when everything collapsed in 07, 08. So we've done a complete 180, a complete turnaround with homes. So what's happening is the homes that need a little TLC are being put on the market because the inventory's not there. So a lot of people, you just talked to a guy who bought in Northbrook, $575,000 single family ranch house. He's going to put 100 G's into it. Hasn't had any work done on the home in 20 some years. He wanted to be in the neighborhood because he wanted to be closer to work and closer to his family and friends. Fine. He's a 50 some year old guy buying a $575,000 home, putting down as little as possible so he's got that liquidity to put back into his house to do the renovations that need to be done.
But generally, I mean, if the baseline is you don't have crippling credit card debt, you don't have a $50,000 student loan.
Right.
I mean, the baseline would be come in to minimize PMI, so that's put 20% down.
Sure.
20% down means you're only financing 80%, so to some degree it's going to lower your monthly payments. I mean, that's... There's nothing wrong with that. If you got 100%, put 100% down. Maybe not. But, I mean, there's nothing wrong with coming in with 20%.
There's nothing wrong with coming in with 3% either. Right.
Asking you to concede my... I'm just so old school about this, David.
I know. And that's one way to look at it.
Isn't 20% better than 5%?
20% is better than 5% when you don't have any other debt to pay off, when you don't need to do any renovations on your home, right? Because if you put down 20% and have to go to Tom Janke at Builder Supply and put in a new kitchen, right? And you've got to put in countertop sinks and everything else because the kitchen's 20, 25 years old and you want a new kitchen. Is it better to put that $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 on a credit card? Or is it better to hold back some of that down payment and take it and go into the edge and have Tom design you a beautiful new kitchen that you don't have to put on a credit card and you can pay cash and your home's value theoretically should go up. So every person's situation is different.
Okay, well, here's what maybe bugs me about this. Bug's not the right word. Just I'm curious and cautious about is if we start to lend people too much money to buy homes with the expectation that the homes are going to get...
Yeah, those days are over.
Okay, well, I don't know, 97% is a lot of money to lend somebody when maybe the house isn't even going to be worth that much in 5 years.
The lending rules today are much stricter and much more constrictive than they were in 07 and 08 when everything went to hell in a handbasket. Right? Back then, it was a wild west of lending. We don't have that today.
Are they giving 100% loans, 103% loans?
No, the 103% loans are gone. The only 100% loan, the rural loans, okay, they have rural loans. phones out in rural areas outside of major metropolitan areas that we're doing these rural loans that do 100, and you could finance your closing costs into it. That's just what they do because they want people in the rural areas to buy homes. There's VA loans. The VA loan is the number one performing loan in the marketplace right now, and veterans who have earned the eligibility to use a VA loan have the lowest default rate with zero down than any other mortgage class of loans.
But my concern that we're lending money to people who cannot pay it off.
You don't have to worry about that.
Or whose homes won't appreciate and you're expecting them to appreciate. It's different now.
It's different now. It's okay. Different now because the barriers to get in are a heck of a lot more stringent than they were 10 years ago.
312-981-7200. There was a story in the Tribune the other day. I thought about David. No, you don't need 20%. 312-981-7200. A few more minutes with David Hochberg. We'll do the news. We'll visit with Gloria Allred. Talk about a couple of strange stories in the news. That'll be after 2:30. That'll be at WGNradio.com. She'll be talking to us about representing some of the family members whose victims were whose family members were victims of the Ripper crew. If you need new windows or doors for your home, call the company recommended by Mr. Fix at Lou Manfredini at House Smarts Radio. Call Gilkey Windows. Gilkey manufactures the highest quality vinyl and fiberglass windows in an endless variety of styles and colors. Call Gilkey now for a limited time right now. Buy one and get one 40% off. That's on the fiberglass and vinyl windows and doors, or up to 5 years, no interest financing. Call Gilkey. 888-3-GILKEY, 888-3-GILKEY. We got one more minute. Then we got to stop talking and get into the newsroom and get ready to White Sox baseball.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I got to plug my brother's Nutella. he made my brother's a manager of Nutella on Michigan and Lake, and he's doing private label Nutellas. I've known Ella for like 3 years. I brought one for he made one up for Ella, he made one up for King John, and for your lovely wife Brenda.
Yep.
And I've never seen her that excited in the
it's
3 years.
It's a jar of Nutella, and then it has your name on the label.
Yes,
big letters here.
Yeah, King John. It's for weddings, bar mitzvahs, parties. So if you're a party planner or doing an event and want the smaller jar, I mean, it's a nice size jar.
So you got to go to the Nutella store on Michigan and Lake,
or you can. I'll tell you what. Here's what you do. If you spell out things, go to Team Hochberg. Send me an email if you're interested, and I will on Facebook, or go to David at 56 David, and I'll get it to him. Because if you spell Hochberg wrong and you spell Ferrero wrong, he'll never get it. So go to David at 56 David. There's a picture that John's going to post. Also,
I will.
If you go to 56 David Win, we had the first mortgage winner of the sweepstakes, Leanne
in
Highland Park.
Tonight on the radio, going to announce.
We're going to do the Ask Troy contest. We're going to pick the winner. I'm going to announce the winner between the second and third period of the Blackhawks. They invited me down into the booth. So that's exciting. And also, we added, for the renters, 56davidwinrent.com. So if you rent, you could win a free rent payment up to, I believe it was $1,500 or $2,000, but you can't win if you don't register at 56davidwinrent.com. So the mortgage is 56davidwin, and the rent is 56davidwinrent. It doesn't cost anything to enter. And thanks for having me.
Nice to see you, Mr. Hochberg. I'm reading from a story in the Tribune the other day. Thomas Cocorellis, age 58. Registered to live at the Wayside Cross Ministries. Wayside Cross Ministries, according to its website, offers spiritually based services for people recently released from prison. Who is he? He was part of that Ripper crew. He was released from prison after serving half of a 70-year sentence for the 1982 murder of 21-year-old Lorianne Borowski, Elmhurst woman, who was abducted and killed while walking to work. Initially sentenced to life in prison for the slaying, Cocorellis won a new trial on an appeal. They said there were legal errors made in 1987, and that led to a shorter sentence. This is one of those stories where every now and then someone says, do you remember that? And you say, no, I don't, and you hear it, and it's such a terrible thing, and you think, how was I not more connected to? How do I not remember better the Ripper crew? Cocorellis was among a four-man group believed to have brutally killed as many as 17 women in the early 1980s, and a man who was shot on the street. They sexually mutilated their victims. They used body parts in cult-like religious rituals at the Chicago home of the ringleader. He's listed in Illinois on the Sex Offender Information Registry. Says here, though, this is interesting. He can live without restrictions near schools and parks. Mental health experts who evaluated him during the court proceedings have said he's not sexually violent and has participated in religious ministry in prison, and he stayed out of trouble. So he's out. The family members aren't happy. They reached out to Gloria Allred. She's on a line. Gloria, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Hi, John. Yes, nice to talk with you, although I'm so sorry it has to be about this horrendous situation involving this convicted murderer, Thomas Kokoralis. And by the way, not only did he murder or attempt to murder more than 18 women in Illinois, but in addition, they are alleged to have raped and tortured and mutilated, as well as murdered or attempted to murder many of the women. And poor Lorianne Borowski was just trying to, you know, she was going to work. She was about to open up the real estate office in which she was working when she was kidnapped and then raped and tortured. Her left breast was amputated while she was still alive. And she was murdered by Thomas Kokoralis and the satanic cult. You're right, he was tried and convicted of both the rape and murder of both Lorianne and another woman called Linda Sutton. Those convictions were reversed, facing a second trial. That's when he entered a plea of guilty to the murder of Lorianne. In return, the other charges were dismissed. He was then sentenced to 70 years in state prison. But under Illinois sentencing laws at the time, he was only required to serve half of that time. And, of course, the family, the mother of Lorianne, Lorraine, and her brother, Mark, they don't have any memory of being consulted by the prosecutors as to their feelings about a plea deal. Neither of them remembers anyone from law enforcement advising them that Lori's murderer would be able to get out of prison early after serving only half of his sentence. But now they're faced with the fact that on Friday, Thomas Kokoralis walked free in Illinois while their beloved Lorianne lies in Mount Emblem Cemetery in Elmhurst, Illinois, because of the death sentence that Kokoralis inflicted on this innocent, sweet young woman.
What options does the family have now?
None, because what those experts, those doctors that you referred to who examined him had to find was not that he was a threat then, and clearly the reason he's been classified as a sexual offender and must register now in Illinois is because the murder was sexually motivated. So, but the doctors would have to find that now he is someone who, you know, is a risk of harm, and apparently there was not sufficient evidence of that. That doesn't mean he's not a risk. It doesn't mean he is. It just means they couldn't find sufficient evidence to keep him in. So he's got no restrictions at all. He's walking free. With approval, he could even move to another state. But if he moves, he does have to re-register his address. And but he could even contact the family of the murder victim if he wanted to. And that's where I think the law should be changed, because they're victims as well, having lost their daughter, their sister. And the idea that he is where he is with that ministry, by the way, that's in the area where they lived. It's not that far from where they live. It's very, very disturbing to them. And I think there should be, in a situation like this, a no-contact order for life. And that if he would violate that, that he could go to prison.
I don't know if recidivism is the word I'm thinking of, but I wonder what the rate is of men who participate in crimes like this. Do they ever actually get away from those impulses or those crimes, or will they forever be that wired a person?
You know, it's a great question. We don't have the answer. By the way, his brother, who was convicted, he received a death sentence in Illinois. He was part of that. Kokoralis, his brother, was part of that satanic cult. He was the last person to be convicted, and then executed in Illinois before the governor in Illinois decided to stop the death sentence. So, I guess we won't have to worry about whether he's at risk of harm because he's 6 feet under.
Is there anything, though, all right, so you would like at least to see the law change so that, well, we can't, there's no double jeopardy here. You can't retry him. You can't put him back in jail because you don't like him. We could change the law, though, to keep him from having any contact with the family members.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the way it should be. Right now, the only time there's a lifetime order, apparently, under Illinois law, and I'm so informed by Mr. Berlin, who was kind enough to speak with me. He is, of course, the elected prosecutor in DuPage County. He said the only time there's a lifetime order is for stalking. Well, certainly, murder is even worse than stalking. I mean, stalking's pretty bad.
Well, this is where you stalk him and then you kill him. So, I mean, you think that would go without saying. If you can apply it there, you should apply it here. Do you know, has he had or tried to have any contact with any of the victims' families?
Well, we don't, you know, as far as we know, he's not tried to contact the family. But, you know, the mother and the brother, they feel as though now that this man is free and with practically no restrictions, except that he's got to register both his residence and his place of employment if he has one. You know, they feel like they have to walk around looking over their shoulder, afraid that maybe he's going to contact them or suddenly appear at their front door.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, it's bad enough that Lorianne's murderer is walking free while she's never going to be able to breathe the air in Illinois again. Now, her family has to learn that under the law there's no protection afforded to them through the issuance of a no-contact order, which would require, should require, that he stay away from them and refrain from contacting them or face legal consequences if he fails. So that's why I think the law should be changed in Illinois. The Sex Offender Registration Act should be amended to state that whomever's classified as a sex offender is required to have no contact with the victim if the person's still alive and no contact with the immediate family of the victim if they request it. I mean, isn't it enough, John, that Lorianne was kidnapped, raped, tortured, had her left breast amputated by this satanic cult, probably while she was still alive, and suffered more than 20 ice pick wounds to her body and was murdered, and now the murderer is set free and the law does not even require that he be ordered to stay away from her family who've suffered, and they're going to continue to suffer more than anyone is going to ever know, and they've been brave enough to alert the community about the release of Coco Rallis, who raped and tortured their precious Lorianne. So they've spoken out because they care about the safety of the community.
I get all of that. And, you know,
it's important to the legislators amend this.
Well, that's the point. I'm glad that you, the soundbite on TV locally was the family being distraught about his release, which is understandable, but there's nothing we can do about that. At least you're talking about something we can do, which is keep him from having contact with them. And there's one other sentence in this story that is of interest to me. Is this correct? It says he can live without restrictions near schools and parks.
It's my understanding that is accurate because he didn't commit the crime against a child. She was 21 years old. She was an adult. And generally, that's a restriction that applies where the sex offender has committed a sex crime against a child.
Oh. So because she was old enough, that's not germane here. So he can live without restrictions near schools and parks. And I guess,
but you know, it's interesting because one of the ways that I understand that the satanic cult was eventually apprehended is because they attacked, and I believe that they raped and somehow thought they murdered a teenage girl, and then they threw her body away, but she survived. And then thank God for that she did, and she was able to identify who had attacked her to the police, and that's how they were able to apprehend the satanic cult.
Gloria Allred's on a phone line. I will continue to follow that story. On a completely different note, just two other quick cases to ask you about.
Sure.
Headline today, this is at TMZ.com. Reporter hires Gloria Allred to go after boxer who kissed her, Kubrat Pulev. I don't know who this guy is, but I watched the video. He's just won a boxing match. Mm-hmm. There's a woman that's interviewing him. They're standing very near each other, and it sounds like the video I saw, she asks a question, he answers. She asks a question, he answers. At one point, they weren't sure if they got the shot right. She re-asks a question. Anyway, They're standing next to each other, and then finally the interview concludes. She says something about the cut that he suffered on his forehead, on his eye. Is that going to keep him from fighting again? And then he kisses her. He grabs her by the face and gives her a full-on mouth-to-mouth kiss and then walks away. She laughs it off and smiles, but we know that she did not invite that and did not want that. What's the latest on this?
Well, the latest is we did a press conference last week in Los Angeles with Jenny and myself. That's a reporter. And she had conducted a pre-fight interview with boxer Kubrat Pulev the day before, March 22nd. And then on March 23rd, after the boxing match in Costa Mesa, she was interviewing him for the post-fight interview. And that's when, and she was recording it. She was doing a selfie video, which she could see because she had one of those long sticks.
She had her arm extended out to the side, yeah.
Yes, and then suddenly he grabs her face, he kisses her, and we allege that was unwelcome, it was unlawful. And that video has gotten far more than a million views. It went viral. It's been, I think, viewed by the California Athletic Commission. And we called for them to temporarily, at least, or immediately suspend the license Mr. Pulev has to box in California. They did suspend him. And now the only way he's going to get his boxing license back is for him to appear on May 14th before the California State Athletic Commission and show why they should reinstate his boxing license. So this is very serious for him. Under California law, and I'm reading from the Business Professions Code, protection of the public shall be the highest priority for the State Athletic Commission in exercising its licensing, regulatory, and disciplinary functions. And whenever the protection of the public is inconsistent with other interests sought to be promoted, the protection of the public shall be paramount. Well, certainly, John, a member of the press or a reporter or even a blogger, whomever is doing a story about a boxer, that's a member of the public and they should be protected. And, you know, at first Mr. Pulev tried to say, well, she was a friend. Well, first of all, she denies she was a friend. She just met her the day previously. But even if she were a friend, he can't just decide he's going to kiss her on the lips. He's got to ask, and here she is doing her job, and all of a sudden, he does that. So we're glad they've conducted an investigation. We're glad that pending the hearing in May, that his license is suspended, and we're looking forward to the hearing we plan to attend on May 14th to testify on that issue before the commission.
One last comment from you, Gloria. Do you have anything to say about the Joe Biden kiss on the forehead or on the top of the head of the Lucy Flores, I believe is her name, the woman that was running for lieutenant governor in Nevada?
Right, and now she's a member of the assembly in Nevada. And I think she's been quite clear and articulate in what she's described. Absolutely. I think, former Vice President Biden needs to keep his hands to himself and not be putting them on women. I mean, if his wife wants to have his hands on her, that's another thing. She can say that's okay. But as to any other woman, he can't take anything for granted. He has to ask. And I'm glad that she spoke out. And, you know, we can say, well, okay, well, that's minimal. He smelled her hair. He put his hand on her or kissed the back of his neck. I don't know her neck. I don't know what happened. But I'm saying that if he did that, and she seems to be very credible, but if he did that, that was wrong. And she has a right to speak out. And, you know, people have to respect boundaries. And women have to be respected, and their space has to be respected. And, you know, we shouldn't have to wait until a woman is raped, not to say that he would do such a thing, but we shouldn't have to wait to that point or where a man does that to say, okay, this is wrong. They need to start respecting a woman's boundaries from the very beginning. And, you know, I know he said he's hearing, he's listening, and all of that.
He said,
he's got to take responsibility for whatever he has done. We've seen videos of him touching other women.
He's always been awkward and inappropriate that way. He thinks it's grandfatherly and affectionate, but it doesn't come across that way at times. Here's his quote. We have arrived at an important time when women feel they can and should relate their experiences, and men should pay attention, and I will. I'm wondering what else, I mean, his behavior needs to change. What else can or should Joe Biden do?
You know, it's not just that, however, that he feels it's appropriate or inappropriate. It's clearly inappropriate to touch a woman without her consent. However a person feels, he's got to think about the impact on the woman, not just on what's going on in his head. Even if he thought it was appropriate or okay or just affectionate or grandfatherly, as you state, John, it's not okay to touch a woman. It's not okay to touch anybody else's daughter without asking. What's so difficult about asking, would it be okay if I gave you a hug? Would it be okay if I gave you a kiss?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all it takes. And by the way, I mean, I think it's fine for a woman to ask a man, is it okay, as well. It goes both ways. But unfortunately, you know, you're right. In the past, some men have taken it for granted that a woman would welcome it. She would like it. Maybe some say she would like even more, whatever. But that's in a man's head. They may be wrong about that assumption about the woman or girl that they're planning to touch.
Yeah, but nobody is suggesting that even this woman herself in her essay was not suggesting it was anything like that. She just thought it was awkward and inappropriate. And nobody's arguing that point here. And I think including Joe Biden, it's just I think it is time, like he said, and Les, you would agree, that if that it was never appropriate, but now it's not tolerable either. You know, you might have been able to get away with it in the past. You should not have. Now it's not even going to be tolerated. Now you can't get away with it. And
exactly, because you know what? Because women are not willing to suffer in silence anymore. I call this the age of the empowerment of women. I call this the reckoning, and it is the reckoning.
I'm out of time, Gloria.
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me.
It's good to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us.
You too, John.
Hi, John. I enjoyed your discussion about the, is it creepy Joe Biden or harmless Joe Biden?
Where are you on that?
I feel as if I was reading Lucy Flores, the assemblywoman's op-ed piece, and I feel like she made an interesting point. She said it isn't so much that his intent was bad, and I think many of us can agree about Joe Biden that's not the case. It's that she was made to feel in this awkward way, and maybe he should read it at that point. Like, okay, let me not do this. You know, let me read the person a little better. If I'm very close to them, as that other woman, the Secretary of Defense, is Carter's wife, was okay with it. She was okay with it. And then
but lucky him in that case. I mean, his default should be, instead of, hey, that's my vibe, it's, no, that's not my vibe. Even if it's my impulse, I don't do that anymore. And if you want to get some of that old, good old touchy-feely Grandfather Joe, ask for it, and I'll give it to you.
Yeah, ask for it. It's right there, ready to go.
Which is really, I don't know how that conversation goes. Hey, would you do that thing where you touch and feel people inappropriately in public?
Yeah, like
give me some of that.
That strange almost kiss on my face and my
shoulder
on
the other
rub.
But Justin Kaufman just strolled in, too. Hi, JC. How are you? Good to see you.
JK.
That's right. I said
I like
C.
JC, too.
It says here, John, people touch each other. It's part of being human, primate. Mm. As long as it's done respectfully, it's going to be okay. By the way, I'm a 52-year-old female.
Yeah, I guys talking about Joe Biden, the kiss on the top of the head, always a weird move. I'm not going to lie to you. It doesn't matter. There's no one that gets away with that except for maybe a mom or a grandma.
And the surprise come up from behind, put the hands on the shoulder thing.
You can be as charming and political, and that's part of your thing to be, I'm trying to connect with you, but yeah, the kiss on the head. Who kisses you ever? How often you kiss on the head if it's not someone who's related to you?
Not related to me, because I kiss my son on the head.
Yeah,
I kiss my wife on the head.
About,
I kiss my dad on the head.
That's the space to be.
I kiss my mom on the head.
Right.
You're still in good
family.
You're still in good place.
I don't kiss Bertrand on the head.
No.
I never kiss Elif on the head.
Bertrand would be hard to, though. He's very tall. So that would be an exception to the kiss on the
right.
head rule.
He doesn't kiss me on the head either.
So it's just a tough place to kiss.
But I know guys who are that way, and they're not all 76 either.
Yeah.
And but the interesting part is the way some are painting this as if it's a disqualifying thing.
Oh,
like,
God.
Disqualify him from the race. And I think, to me, that goes a step too far, but it is opening up an interesting conversation.
This is the guy who leaned in and said, this is a big effing deal. He doesn't have a good editor.
No.
Right?
That's
he just
true.
Says and does dumb stuff. If he becomes president, you're going to get that. If he's the party's candidate, you're going to get ready, folks. That's Joe Biden.
But aren't we living in a new moment? And I think that's what the woman who came forward on this is saying. 5 years ago, people wouldn't give her the time of day to talk about Joe Biden in any sort. It's a new moment to say some of the things we've done. Maybe, as this person has said, she did not come out and say this was illegal. She said it's inappropriate.
But 5 years ago, was it as inappropriate as it feels today?
Sure. I think it was. You just didn't have a voice to be able to say that. It sort of just made you feel a little bit weird. And Exactly. You're like, all right.
I'll get out of your way. You guys have a really good program. What's up?
We have Kevin Graham, the Fraternal Order Police President, will be here to explain why they chose to rally downtown today against Kim Fox. We'll talk to Rick Pearson as tomorrow is Election Day here in the city of Chicago. Tom Skilling joins us. And Top 5 at 5, you won't believe.